everybody, and welcome to this latest edition of the Powder Blue Podcast. A few games are in the book. Two Grapefruit League games. Why do I always have trouble saying that, Jeff?
I don't know. It is harder to say Grapefruit League than Cactus League, I think. But yeah, it's I'm just so excited to talk ball, Frank. That's what happened.
Yeah, it's an actual baseball on actual television. How's it feel, Jeff?
It was great. I watched the game the other day. Well, I watched the first game that was on TV, and then I watched the game either a day or two later where a lot of the studs threw. Took a couple of no-hitters. I think they took a no-hitter into the seventh inning, so that was fun.
I think they got to the eighth. Gregory Soto blew it.
Right. Go figure. No. Went off the second baseman's glove. He tried, but
That should not have been a hit. I mean, like, a normal second baseman gets that. Now, you know, apologies to the late game minor league fill-in. In fact, I don't even remember who it was.
Yeah, I couldn't remember
the moment it happened, and I guess it was over my head at that point that it was a no-hitter. I'm like, Bryson Stott would have got that, but almost a no-hitter. I love the early spring games because the road team is never, I mean, there are rules. A lot of people don't know this. There actually is a certain number of veterans you must take on the road. But, yeah. You know, often the veteran is somebody who, now it was easy for the Phillies in Dunedin because, I mean, not that Dunedin's far, but Whit Merrifield just played there with those guys last year. And if you saw him messing around with Tim Mesa, who lost the fantasy football league they were in, playing bat boy with his, what was his record on his back? Like 3-14 or something in his fantasy league. A player like that will go. But you know, right now the Phillies are down in, are in the Southwest Florida run, which usually means playing the Red Sox and the Twins in the same stadium, same complex.
Right.
So they usually the ones that end up on the road at the short stick for that trip. But they only do it once. But I think, you know, the nice thing is we're going to start seeing maybe when they get back from that, a lot of games at Bay Care Ballpark coming up, going to start seeing a lot of the starters playing a little bit more.
Yeah, and I know you usually make an annual trek down there, so I know you're excited about it. And it's good to see it back. I spring training for me is like I love the first 2 weeks because it's like it's cool. You see the nice weather and everything. And then by like March 15th, or so you're like, all right, just get me to the season opener, please. Which is, you know, early this year, right? I mean, March 28th, I think, is the season opener. So
March 28th.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, early start. Early Easter. It's always, why do they always start over Easter weekend? I don't know why. Like, cause they, you know, trying to make it so there's less demand for the games. I don't know. But second year in a row, Phillies are starting, even though Easter is much earlier this year than it usually is. So it's always. Always seems to be on the that weekend, but yes, I am headed down to Florida on Thursday. We're recording this on Tuesday, so I should be at the game Friday, Saturday, taking Sunday off. I'm not traveling to where the Braves play because no one wants to go there. It's not a fun ride. So you know, there's a lot of really good ballparks in the area around Clearwater. Dunedin is one of my favorite places to go. Oh, it's really close. I mean, the park itself isn't anything fancy, even though they're upgrading it. So I'll be in Dunedin on Monday. But, you know, taking trips, it's really easy to get to Tampa when the Phillies are playing the Yankees. Really easy to get to, not easy per se, but a little bit further down. You get to Sarasota and see the Orioles once in a while, or down to Bradenton and see the Pirates. But yeah, this is the Phillies are getting the Southwest Florida leg of spring training out of the way now. He's down Fort Myers area, so but Phillies return Wednesday to Bay Care Ballpark, and then they're in Dunedin, and then they're home for a couple. So
okay, just took a pause there to fix my audio. I know I had my lesser headphones on and mouthpiece on rather than my better equipment, but I think we got that worked out, Jeff. You can hear me all right now.
Yeah, spring training for everyone, Frank, including us and our audio equipment.
Yeah, I apologize if it sounds bad. Now, the next time we get to do this, I'm sure we will be on listener equipment because I will be in Florida and I can't carry this fancy microphone down with me because, you know, you don't really get checked. You don't really get any bags included on most of the airlines that go to Tampa these days. So I'll be doing my best with my laptop, but you're right. Back on track. Yes, baseball's back. Bay Care Ballpark's back. I really recommend, I was saying, places you can travel nearby. It's a little easy to get to where the Braves play and the Rays play, but there's so much around. And by the way, when you go to spring training, you need a day off to just enjoy Clearwater, right? So it's
course.
totally okay not to go to a game every single day. So I'm looking forward to the beach on Sunday. Sunday will be my day of rest from baseball, but I'll be at least four games, if not, yeah, four, at least four games down there between Dunedin and Jeff, nothing beats it, So it's a different pace of life when you get down there, right? Because everybody's on vacation
Oh
or they've
yeah.
retired down there, just chilling basically. And it's a good time, Jeff.
And for the players, I know it's always been a relaxed environment. It's not like they're feeling the weight of having to win the World Series when they're down in Clearwater. But as soon as they come up north, it's the Braves, right? Like, it's the Braves opening weekend. And I do think that people, and I believe this as well, Frank, I think that there should be a better expectation of performing better in March or April, and not just relying on, oh, we'll catch fire over the last 2 months and beat the Braves in the postseason or get hot. I mean, there's really no excuse when you look at the team on paper and the talent that they have to start off really slowly, especially knowing that Bryce Harper right now starts the season healthy. Your three pitchers are all in camp and have been throwing. So you don't expect Ranger Suarez to struggle as much. You would like to see Nola and Wheeler start just a tick better. They don't have to be aces, lights out, but they've really struggled in April and May, the last or March now, the last few months. So, I just don't think that there's not really an excuse to be like a team that's under 500 or hovering around 500 for the first 50, 60 games of the year.
I felt like last year, to a certain extent, that the whole thing was, well, we got to hang in there until Bryce Harper's back. And so, like, hanging in there meant being like mediocre, like 500-ish, right? I mean, that's basically what the Phillies were. I mean, they weren't totally awful. They were in around 500. And then when things settled down and he came back and Ranger Suarez came back, they seemed to hit their stride. I mean, knock on wood, Jeff, nobody is, there's no big question mark at the moment. Everybody is there.
That's true. They are there. And that's why I have higher expectations for this team earlier on. And then, as we'll talk about, I think if you also consider not just Bryce Harper and Ranger Suarez taking a while to get stretched out, but their outfield situation was perilous because without Harp and playing different guys at first, and then Harp had a DH when he did come back, and you needed Schwarber in the outfield. And now, knock on wood, everything stays the same. Schwarber will be DHing almost all the time. And depending on what happens in center field, right, with Rojas and Brandon Marsh and what have you, you've got Whit Merrifield now as a nice backup who I think, Frank, and you might agree, I think will probably play a little bit more, especially against left-handers, than people might think because of his versatility and because you just don't know right now what you're going to get from Rojas on a day-to-day basis until he comes north, if he comes north at all.
Yeah, I think when we left this, we were going through the right-handed bats left, and I mentioned Whit Merrifield was one of the names I brought up, and I thought that based on what I heard him say publicly on MLB Network radio was that, oh, I know my worth, and he wanted a multi-year deal and big bucks, it sounded like. And I thought, okay, well, the Phillies aren't looking for somebody long term; they're looking for someone they can plug as a right-handed bat into left field. I mean, that was what we were talking about, right? And so, the fact that he signed the 1 year deal for $8 million. Now when I found that he signed it for $8 million, I was like, okay, well, is he going to be bitter he didn't get the big deal? And then it sounded like as it kind of came to fruition that he had five teams he was talking to. And then in the end, he said, hey, I've done a lot of things. I've accomplished a lot individually, star, blah, 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 blah. I just want to win. So I think that attitude he's coming into camp with is what the Phillies need. Somebody that isn't necessarily back every day, and that knowing that there will be times where he doesn't play, but I think he's going to play a lot. I still see Johan Rojas going down to AAA to start the season. I think he'll be there forever, but I think what we're he had a couple hits so far in Grapefruit League action. It seemed like he's still chasing a lot of bad pitches and swinging at everything. We still have a few weeks left, right, Jeff? But I think we would love to see him work on that bat a little bit more. And the fact that they still have fish and pate hanging around, like they have a noodle option. That's not good, not a horrible option. I mean, I think rojas, even though they profile similarly, rojas will be better in the long term. But they have the luxury of saying, okay, well, look, we can play Murphy on the left, we can play Marsh in center, can play Marsh in left, play Pache in center if they want for some. But I think what Merrifield's going to play a lot, especially early, especially when Rojas works a lot of that out. And then because he's got that attitude, I mean, he's willing to even jump in third base sometimes. Yeah, I think we're going to see that coming along. So I see this guy playing 75% of the games at least.
Wow. I think that that's both good and bad because, as we talked about in the last pod, what you really want from the Phillies this year to take an improvement from next year is having a better and deeper bench. So ideally, you want Rojas to come up north and either platoon or with Marsh or play center, and Marsh plays left, and you get a Merrifield to use off the bench. If Merrifield has to start 75% of the game, then you're back to, well, what's my outfield depth? Is it Jake Cave? Is it Christian Pache? You know what I'm saying? You're sort of in that position where you're not pulling a nice, experienced, good major league player like Merrifield off the bench. But I agree. I think Rojas has to prove it to you. So, we'll see. The Phillies might not even be done, but it's kind of funny that you bring this up because when they signed Merrifield, I sort of tongue in cheek tweeted, "Do the Phillies have a new leadoff hitter?" Right, and everybody, oh man. Like, you should have seen, like, you don't know baseball, you know what you're talking about. I mean, it was sort of tongue in cheek because I know that the leadoff position is forever the argument and the discussion about the Phillies lineup. It's interesting they've batted him leadoff so far in spring, but we talked about this in the last pod. I don't know where he in this lineup that they have ideally fits. If you don't lead him off, he could be a ninth hitter as like a double leadoff situation, but he's got a weird kind of batting skill set that I don't know. And plus, they're so top heavy with really good hitters, not named Whit Merrifield. So I don't know where it'll fit.
I think one thing we're forgetting about is, especially early on, we got used to the playoff lineups, and right, you make your lineup and that's your lineup, right? As we saw, again, people debated that plenty, right? But people are going to need days off. People are going to be banged up, and throughout the course of the season, that's when you get the days off. So there's the opening day lineup, and then it's not going to look the same for weeks, right? Because you need to give Marsh a day here. You need Stott a day there. You'll need to give Boehm a day there. Harper a day there. Maybe not Harper so much, but I think the fact that you can move Merrifield around gives you the opportunity to say, okay, yeah, Castellanos should get off today. He earned right, and you don't have to worry about it as much. So I mean, I see him as the piece that could be moving up and down. I think he's going to go Schwarber and lead off. I think that's just. Billy started winning again last year when that happened, and the pressure was off of him to be Harper's bat when Harper was out. So I think we're going to see a lot of mixing and matching and people moving up and down. And I know one thing Mike Gill asked me on the radio last Tuesday while I was doing a mailbag was do you think Boehm could be a middle of the order? I said, well, you know what? When guys have their days off, he's going to do it all, even if he's not the first day. So, I mean, Merrifield gives you the option, and you feel like you have an actual major league hitter who is in the lineup when somebody's off. I mean, too many times last year when you had Josh Harrison, like it was like Josh Harrison, Jake Cave in the lineup multiple days a week. Just because when you had to give somebody a day, it really felt like there was this massive hole. Yeah. So, but Nick Castellanos is going to need his day, and probably Schwarber since. I would be shocked if Schwarber was in the field this year. Like it would take Bryce Harper tearing his ACL again or UCL again, and only being able to DH for Schwarber to end up back in the field. I think that is we're at the point now where Schwarber is just DH. So that means you need somebody like Merrifield to bounce around, and the lineup will shift accordingly. And then, but I think opening day, I think you want Merrifield in left field, and probably not batting first, but. Probably opening day, he'll be eighth or ninth. And then as time goes on, you're going to see him bouncing around to fill in for different people.
Ninth to me makes a lot of sense too in that double leadoff spot. he can get on base, gets on base well, and steals bases, right? So he can be a guy who gets you on base, and all of a sudden Schwarber's coming up with a couple guys on, and that makes it good for him. So I could see it happening. I think he's an upgrade. I just my hope is that Rojas turns it around. I would like to the Phillies. I would feel better about them if they came up north with Marsh, Rojas, and Merrifield because they all deserve it. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying I hope that they all earn that spots and that the Phillies have a nice little bench slash rotation that they can play around with and go righty lefty on, you know.
Right. So earlier on, you mentioned the Phillies might not be done yet. I mean, the only place that really they would add something at this point would be starting rotation. And there's a couple big name pitchers still left. You have Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell. And I think it feels like Montgomery is trending towards the Red Sox. So it would sound, but the Phillies don't necessarily care much about Snell. But I mean, if opportunity is you get him on a big short-term deal, maybe you take advantage of the situation. But do you think Philly's actually going to be in on these two guys?
I don't know. I mean, maybe if the price came down, they would, but I also think if the price on these guys comes down, then the Phillies are going to be battling it with the Yankees and some other teams that are trying to, maybe even the Dodgers. I mean, they're throwing money at everybody just to get a pitcher, Padres, Braves, maybe. So then that sort of makes the price sort of go back up, doesn't it? When you have that kind of bidding war. I don't know. I think it would make sense if they could. I think that I'm always in favor of adding an extra arm. And then the closer we get with these guys unsigned, as you mentioned, Merrifield, right? Well, maybe these guys say, hey, I'll just sign a short-term deal and try to win and then hit the market again next year, coming off a better year. That could favor the Phillies, as opposed to some of the like the Yankees or somebody who had struggled last year or wasn't, a couple of swings away from the World Series. But we'll see. I definitely think it would benefit them.
Yeah, I don't know that the Phillies would. And here's the thing too with Blake Snell, he's 31 years old. I don't know that teams are really eager to go too long a deal. Now they have the nickname the Boris Four: Bellinger, Snell, Montgomery, and Matt Chapman. And Bellinger finally came off the board. Seemed like a smaller deal than he ever would have wanted. I mean, he's probably back where he belongs with the Chicago Cubs, but. Could that be a sign that the prices are coming down on the others? I think that that's a possibility. I mean, I think the Phillies would love to be opportunists, but I still worry though, in general, about the Phillies starting rotation depth. The fact that there is no clear number six right now. If Christopher Sanchez was your number six, you feel a lot better than Christopher Sanchez being one of the five because A, what if he falters? What if he, while he showed some promise last year, maybe he just doesn't have it, and then what do you do? And then beyond that, Phillies had one of the last year. But what if somebody gets hurt? I'm gonna say something wrong. I'm certainly hoping nothing major, but the wear of the tears that comes with the season, could lead to a little nagging injury for somebody. So they only have clear six. So not really big guys, but they still have Nick Lorenzen out there. I said this last time, but I would consider just seeing if he would come back.
Yeah, no, Lorenzen makes sense. But by the way, like every good team right now, maybe outside of the Dodgers, is thinking the same thing about their team. I mean, the Braves, right, who are always the Phillies' nemesis, they're probably looking at 4 and 5 and saying, all right, we got Chris Sale, but like, are we getting 130 innings this year out of Chris Sale? Can we get that? I don't know. If not, do we really know if AJ Smith-Shaver can just go in and be a really good fifth starter if we need? Max Fried, very good pitcher, has also dealt with at times staying healthy, giving you enough innings. And who's their fourth? I guess Charlie Morton would be their fourth. So you always kind of wonder what Charlie Morton's age. I mean, he's still a very good strikeout pitcher, but he's only a 4 to 5 inning pitcher, right? So you're asking the same questions about a team that won 100 and some odd games last year. I mean, look at the Orioles. I mean, I think there are big expectations for them. Bradish is hurt already. Their other fourth or fifth starter got hurt or has question marks. I mean, they traded for Burns. So I do see a lot of that top heaviness. I mean, the Yankees, right? They're probably really happy about Gerrit Cole, but they have no idea what they're going to get from Rodon, from Nestor Cortes, from who's their I forget who their other guy is. But like that, my point is like everybody outside of the Dodgers from 3 to 5 in the rotation probably is looking and saying, "Man, we could probably be a little better, or we have question marks there."
Yeah, I just don't want to see them every 5th day stuck with like Nick Nelson, just throwing a clunker just to fill innings, you know? Like well, he didn't look good at his one appearance. I know that doesn't mean a whole lot at this point, but really, yeah, Nick Nelson is probably the next on the depth chart, and I don't love that. All right, so
I was mildly encouraged by Mick Abel's outing the other day, though. 2 strikeouts in 1 inning, and that was the game where everybody they carried the no-hitter into the eighth, and he was pitching with the studs, so that was good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. So keep an eye on him. I think he's depth, but later in the year, realistically, I think he's the type that you hope you don't have to use until June or July or even later than that. But he's there. I mean, I don't necessarily. I'm not overly protective of the young arms, but I want to make sure he's got some time at AAA first before he comes to the major leagues. And by some, I know he did have a cup of coffee there, but. I want to see him. I want to see him get maybe like 5 to 10 starts, and you kind of have a better idea of what you have there with him at this point, and if he's best being ready for the major leagues. Okay, now, so the betting odds are out, and the under for the Phillies is 90.5 wins. Where are you in this? Are the Phillies over or under 90.5?
Frank, I mean, they won 90 games last year. So Vegas is telling you they're all they have to do is win one more game than last year to be over. And we just discussed all the obstacles and hurdles that they faced last year in April and May till Harp got back. So against my better judgment, I'm going to take the over on the Phillies wins. I'm going to believe that they will have a better first 2 months of the season. That they're a more complete team, that they will avoid major injury bugs. And I'm going to even say maybe Kyle Schwarber doesn't wait 2 months to hit a few home runs. He's always good for a home run on opening day, then nothing in between, and then like heating it up in June, right? That's his big month. I just think that him not having to play in the outfield will probably help him out as a hitter earlier in the season. Take a little bit of load off him, help him stay healthy and those knees stay healthy, right? And you get a little more production. So I'm gonna take the over, and I'm sorry, Phillies Nation, for now jinxing the Phillies.
Well, I would also go over, and I would say that because when you look at last year, if you throw the March game in with April, 15-14, May 10-16, I would have a hard time seeing a 10-16 May out of this Phillies team. So the rest of the year, 8-8 June, right? Then they were, basically my point is like, I just don't see the low being that low. Whenever they, all teams, well, even the good teams, right? I remember the 2011 Phillies, who perhaps were the best team, over this course of a season I've ever seen in my lifetime. Even they had some moments where it felt like they were at a little downturn. But I don't think 6 games under .500 is going to hit the Phillies in any month. And for that alone, I think it puts them over that. I mean, even if over means 92 or 93, I also think that the Phillies have a shot of being over. Now, that also, for me, to be realistic, I think that also means that they're second place in the National League East. How about you?
Yeah, probably. The Braves have an over under of, well, I think 101 or something like that, which is pretty it's almost an absurdly high total until you see that the Dodgers 103 and a half, which is like one of the highest over unders I think I've ever seen.
Mm.
But talk about expectations, and they might go over it, to be honest. But I think the 101 is kind of lofty, to be honest with you. But I wouldn't surprise me if the Braves were a 98, 99. But yeah, I still think they just always start off better than the Phillies do, and that always makes a difference. I would love to see the Phillies be a little bit more competitive and make this thing a neck and neck race. I think that's obvious. It goes without saying, and it's possible, could be. But if I had to, wager, then I would put my money on the Braves to finish first. Yes.
To me, their big question mark is Chris Sale. What does Chris Sale have? Is he going to be healthy after a few years of not being healthy? I mean, that's a real wild card if you ask me. But yeah, I think they're still going to be the clear favorites. But then again, as we saw, top half rotations and playoff games, you can make it work. So
And I'll tell
listen,
you real
Jeff.
frank, I don't know how many people will, like, if you polled like baseball writers, expert, all that stuff, right? And said, are Kevin Minter and Raisel Iglesias in your top five in late relief categories, right? In any ranking, I don't think any people would put them in the top 10, but those are the two guys who seem to get it done for them, or at least last year. Every year I go in saying, like, I'm not really sure about this Braves back end bullpen. But I guess when you got like 8-2 leads and 9-3 leads, it doesn't matter. But it's not a great on paper back end bullpen. I'll just say that.
Phillies always seem to get to Minter, so I love watching them head to head because the Phillies can hang with the Braves, right? And of course, you saw they can beat them in playoff series
Yes.
as well.
Well, it's time for me to go pack, Jeff. So that'll do it for this edition of the Powder Blue Podcast. Frank Close, Jeff Mosher. I'll catch you next time from Clearwater.